There's no question that Alaska has a cash flow problem. Oil prices are about half of what they would need to be for the state to balance the budget without dipping into reserves. But how much fiscal trouble are we really in? I'm Lori Townsend. A recent report written by longtime Alaska economist Greg Erickson paints a bleak picture. Are we already in recession? What indicators can be used to make that determination? What can state government do to keep the state's economy from eroding? The future of Alaska's fiscal stability is the topic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. The name of the report commissioned by the state and written by one of our guests today certainly sounds concerning, the Great Alaska Recession. But are we there, or are we still on solid financial ground? Joining me to help delve into these questions are my guests, economist Greg Erickson, who wrote the report for the Alaska Mental Health Trust. Greg has been an economist in Alaska for about five decades and is the former owner and editor of the Alaska Budget Report. Also joining me today is Larry Persily. Larry has worked in a variety of roles in state government, including Deputy Revenue Commissioner, and was the federal coordinator for the gas pipeline project until recently. He now works for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Government as an oil and gas advisor. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello, glad to be here.
Greg, your report, The Great Alaska Recession, says we're already in recession, that it started in 2014, and the current fiscal crisis is shaping up to be the worst since statehood. It seems like you may have walked back those predictions a bit in a recent write-up in the Alaska Dispatch. So tell us where you think the state economy stands currently, recession or not yet?
Well, recession is kind of a flexible term. There's no standardized definition of it for a state economy. Back in April, March, when I and my co-author, Milt Barker, who is also a longtime Alaska economist, were looking at the employment numbers, there were 3 months of declining employment, and that to us signaled the beginning of the recession. Since then, there's been an upward blip, maybe it's a reversal of the trend. I think it's a blip, and I think by the fall, when they start laying off teachers and local government people as a consequence of the recent budget cuts, that we'll see declining employment again. And in fact, in the numbers, it looks like that the more recent numbers, it looks like all of the increase has been from a uptick in basically oil industry spending, and I don't think anybody expects that to last. So it depends on what your definition of recession is. I think we are in a recession. I think I could make a good case that we're not yet, but the real important point is that we're headed there.
If you'd like to join our conversation today, you can do that statewide. The number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in the Anchorage area, you can call 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Greg, Alaskans who have been here for a long time remember other challenging fiscal times. How is this particular set of circumstances different?
Well, it is fundamentally different because all those previous recessions were not caused by a fundamental decline in the value of what Alaskans sell to make their way in the world, to earn their way in the world. The recession of 2009 was really a spillover effect from the national recession. The last big recession in Alaska in the mid-1980s was what economists call a classical Keynesian accelerator recession, which basically means that we did it to ourselves by expanding state spending so fast that it couldn't be sustained. And we detail, Mr. Barker and I detail that at length in our paper, why those recessions are different. The 1977 recession, after the oil pipeline was completed, was simply the end of a big construction project. So that was, all of those were different. What we're seeing right now is much more like a typical regional recession where, you know, if the region concentrates on selling wheat or commercial airplanes, for example, like Seattle did in the 70s, and the market bottom falls out of the market for those products or services, that the region goes into recession. But ours differs from the sort of standard model in that we got a lot of other bad things going on in the Alaska economy as well at this time, and it's sort of like a perfect storm of unfortunate events coming all together.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm your host today, Lori Townsend, and we're talking about the Alaska economy and whether or not we're in recession or headed for recession. My guests are Greg Erickson, longtime Alaska economist, and Larry Persily, who is a former deputy revenue commissioner for the state, among other positions that he's held here, and currently works as an oil and gas advisor for the Kenai Peninsula Borough government. Larry, I want to get you in here now. What are your thoughts? What were your thoughts when you first read Greg's report?
Well, the sad thing is I agreed with Greg. I don't know if we're technically in a recession now, like Greg said, depends the definition you use, but clearly, you look at declining federal dollars, declining state dollars, which are going to decline even more in the future, low oil prices. That's how we make our living. I don't see how we can avoid a recession. The question is, what does the state do about it? How deep is it? How long does it last? But I agree with Greg. You look at the factors, it's inevitable you are going to have fewer jobs, less money circulating around through the economy. To me, that's a definition of a recession.
Greg, let's talk about some of those numbers. In the executive summary, you write that unless oil prices rebound, 4,000 jobs will be lost by September, this September, and 20,000 will be lost by September 2016. Talk about how you arrived at those particular numbers.
Well, it's basically my judgment, given the factors that we've been discussing. Nothing more sophisticated or complicated than that, and I could be all wrong about that. But I think the reason I put those numbers in because it made sense to me to characterize what I see as the magnitude of this recession. I think it's going to be big. Now, the 4,000 jobs may be lost in by October, or maybe even have to wait till December before those jobs are lost. This recent uptick in jobs makes that more probable, but it's a big recession. It's a big wave that's coming to us on this beach that we call Alaska, and we'll survive it better if we have a good sense of how big it is, and that's my estimate. And it's a educated guess, nothing more than that.
Greg, what sectors will be hit the hardest?
Well, of course, oil, but we've already seen the sectors that have been hit hardest so far have been the local government and the federal government, and those are probably following from two different causes. Local government spending has been declining for 3 years because the state government has been allowed inflation and sometimes actual cuts to erode the money that was transferred to local governments, and that includes some native corporations and nonprofits as well. On the case of the federal government employment in Alaska has been declining at more than 4% a year, and the federal government's always been a big factor in the Alaska economy, probably second only to oil. That long-term decline has much exceeded the decline in federal employment nationally, which is only about 1%. So something about Alaska has caused the federal government to cut back here more than elsewhere. But the biggest factor, of course, is the role of the oil industry, which Scott Goldsmith says accounts for more than half of the Alaska economy. And that's because that's the main product we sell to earn our way in the world. And its value has really declined, and that affects state spending, local spending, spending on construction, spending on oil industry contractors, and a few people who work for oil companies directly.
If you're just joining us today, we're talking about Alaska's economy, and you can join our conversation. 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. That's 1-800-478-8255. Or in the Anchorage area, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Is there any way to know, to sort of parse those numbers and to know if the industry jobs in particular, the direct oil industry work and all the related support jobs, are they primarily state residents, or if a significant percentage are working here but living out of state? Is there a way to know how many? It just seems to me that the more impacts to people who are in the state, that those then can ripple out to real estate and other things. Is there a way to know how many people are actually in state and out of state with those positions?
This is Greg. The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development has done a pretty good job of keeping track of that, and have improved their methodology for keeping track of that. They used to just look at the major oil companies, and now they look at contractors as well and other parts of the construction industry as well. I'm not an expert on that, but on the proportions. But the answer to your question is yes, they're pretty good data. It lags quite a bit because it's mostly based on permanent fund dividend applications. And Larry, as a former director of the permanent fund division, I believe, or certainly supervised it, may have some other insight on that.
And Greg's right. There is that lag. So if you moved here for a job in 2013 and then 2014 was your qualifying year to get the 2015 dividend, until the 2015 dividend report is matched with payroll, you're still going to be listed as a non-resident, even if you've lived here a couple years. So there is a lag, and I think that results in underreporting. It results in a number from the Department of Labor saying X percentage of resident hire in oil and gas, for example, that is lower than what it really is, but there's always going to be some non-resident hire. There's going to be some skills that are just people here aren't available. But Department of Labor tracks it pretty well. Certainly, politicians track it well. And this gets to sort of some of the discussions people are having today in terms of how to fill the fiscal gap without a personal income tax. The state gains no revenue from those non-resident workers who come up here, whether it's 10%, 15%, whatever percentage it is within the oil and gas industry.
Mm-hmm. Greg, you mentioned earlier this perfect storm that's sort of converging to create this fiscal problem that the state is facing. And it's not just the price of oil, certainly. It's a combination of the price and the decline. When I first came to Alaska, Tony Knowles was governor, and the price of oil, I think, was in the 20-some dollars per barrel, but we were putting out about twice as much at that point in time, I think. So how big is the factor of the decline in combination with the oil in creating this situation, and what's the outlook for that?
Well, it's sort of like an older person who suddenly has heart failure. You know, you're getting older, and you're going to die soon, or sometime soon. You know, let's say your life expectancy is 12 years, but suddenly you have a heart attack, and when somebody asks you how's your health, you probably wouldn't mention that you're going to be likely dead in 12 years. You'd probably mention the heart attack. And the dropping prices are like the heart attack. It happens suddenly, and there's an important caveat to the recession predictions here, and that is if oil prices really rebounded suddenly and dramatically and stayed up for a while, all these projections are off, and all bets are off, and Alaska would go back to its old ways for a while. But in the longer run, unless there are unexpected developments, and those could happen, technological developments could make a lot of Alaska's oil that's now locked up in the ground available, but we don't, you know, Larry personally has more insight on that than I do, but I don't think most experts see that coming. There has been a lot of effort over the years to try to stimulate additional production. A lot of that's focused on exploration and capital spending subsidies to the oil industry. There's dispute about how the results of those have played out, but I think most people would agree that they have not been successful in reversing the decline. I remember back in 1999, Tony Knowles and what was then the ARCO company had a wonderful motto, which was no decline in 99, which was going to claim to have reversed the production decline, and they stopped talking about that after about 8 months because there was no chance that it was going to be reversed. And in fact, oil has declined in all every year since 1977 except 1 year, and I don't see that changing.
Larry, do you want to weigh in on that, the idea of what the future might look like? I know that people that are supporters of the tax cuts that were put in place, the tax breaks that were under the Parnell administration, the idea was to help spur and incentivize more production by offering these tax breaks. That, it seems like that would take time. If that's going to work, it would take some time. It's not going to happen in a year. What are you seeing, or what does this look like going forward?
Well, we are seeing increased activity on the North Slope. How much is attributable to the changes in the oil tax rate? How much is attributable to oil tax credits that the state is handing out at hundreds of millions of dollars a year? You know, I don't know that magic answer, and probably no one does, but I think it's good to hear Alaskans talk about reality, and the reality is you're not going to get enough new production to bail out the state's finances. If things go well, like Greg said, it's declined every year. If things went great, you know, we're at about 500,000 barrels a day, give or take, through the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline these days. You look out 10 years from now, if you could stem that decline and still be producing 10 years from now, 450,000 barrels a day, that would be a victory. Maybe even 500,000, but the days of $1 million or million barrels a day, it's not there. It's just an old declining field, but if we can stem or slow that production decline, that's going to be the best we hope for. As far as prices, even if the world changes and the price gets back up to $100 a barrel, the industry knows that isn't going to last. It never lasts. They're not going to run out and spend billions looking for new fields just because of a temporary spike in prices. So I'm glad Alaskans are looking at the reality that oil prices are not going to bail us out. Production is not going to double in the next couple of years. We've got to come up with a long-term fiscal plan based on the probability of declining production and reasonable prices.
Laurie, this is Greg. Just one correction, perhaps, to what you said earlier. The major tax breaks that we have right now were, as you said, added by the Parnell administration. But the subsidies, the credits, and the exploration and development subsidies were actually added in the ACES law under Governor Palin, and were actually rolled back somewhat under the Parnell administration.
Right. Thank you for that clarification. That's important. If you're just tuning in, just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Laurie Townsend, and we're talking today about Alaska's economy with my guests, Greg Erickson, a longtime Alaska economist, and Larry Pursley, who works for the Kenai Bureau government as an advisor on oil and gas. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255 or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422, or email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Greg, in your report, you reference the recession that ended in 1988 as the worst one to date that Alaska has weathered. Why was that recession so bad, and how does the current situation compare?
Well, I quoted economist Scott Goldsmith, who described the 88 recession, what I think, in a very clear way. And what he said was, if I can find, I'm looking at my report right now and quickly can find it. He basically said that we did this to ourselves. We caused state spending on capital projects, primarily schools, convention centers, highways, infrastructure, bridges, to expand, and that caused the influx of a lot of workers, and those workers had children, and they needed to go to schools, and to cause a great housing shortage, and so we got a lot of capital flowing into subsidized housing through HFC, and it looked like we weren't keeping up, but all of that influx was the consequence of workers, was a consequence of our own state spending. And when our state spending stopped expanding, all it had to do was stop expanding. It didn't have to drop. The bottom fell out of that that construction industry bubble, and consequently, we suddenly had schools, for example, down in the Kenai Peninsula, that that there were no students to fill, and so there were suddenly big cutbacks, and that caused a sudden and sharp recession that was very painful to most Alaskan families. But once we'd wrung the excess capacity out of the construction and state government sectors, particularly in the housing sector, everything got back to normal pretty quickly. And by 1989, the economy was growing in a very robust way again. This recession, if it occurs, as I expect it will, is much more going to be much more difficult to end. And let me just say one other thing. There is nothing the state can do to head this recession off, apart from spending the permanent fund. And that, I suppose, could do it for a while. We are in for a big recession, and the principal goal of the state should be, I think, to try to soften the blow and to try to prepare the economy for the resumption of growth later on when that will happen, and to prepare for Alaska that is going to have fewer people and fewer jobs when it finally stabilizes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about bracing for that. What should Alaskans do to be prepared for a bad or at the very least, a very sluggish economy? Makes me a little nervous to own a home right now. So what should people do?
Well, I think the best advice is to be very cautious, and I'm sure you'll see bankers and others in that kind of profession start advising caution when it becomes clear to them that the recession is in store. I have a nephew in Anchorage who just bought a new house, and you know, I talked to his dad about that, and the nephew has a really good job. He's high on a seniority list. Doesn't look like he'll get laid off during the recession. They have good assets, so you don't want to give a blanket recommendation, but I think it would be unwise for people to extend themselves credit-wise at this time. It's time for sort of tighten the belt and consolidate and get ready for perhaps unexpected reversals.
The recession that ended in 1988, you said it turned around in about a year, so that seems quite fast that the economy started coming back. Is there any reason to think that the other side of what we're facing now would be different?
Well, yeah. First of all, the recession started in 1986, and we didn't really get growth going again until late 88, early 1989. So that was it was a 2 year. I think what's happening now is fundamentally different because we don't have to. We've got a lot of capacity to wring out of our economy. That's not the problem. The problem is the long-term decline in the value of our what we export, and that's not. You know, if that goes away, we're okay for a while. But unless that goes away, this recession is going to linger for a long time until the economy gets down to and the population gets down to a level where it can be self-sustaining. And I suspect that's quite a bit smaller than it is right now.
Greg, one of the things that you mentioned in your report is Medicaid expansion. Why do you think that's important for the state economy?
Well, it adds about 1,300 jobs in the first year, and, you know, 1,300 jobs doesn't look like very many jobs, but in the context of an economy that's losing 4,000 jobs or however many it is, it's a major offset, and it brings federal money in. It doesn't cost the state anything. In fact, it causes the state to be able to reduce its spending by some $4 million, according to the official figures. There's been some dispute about those, but I don't have any doubt that Medicaid expansion is the one, in my view, as an economist, the one no-brainer thing that the state could do to mitigate the coming recession. Can't reverse it, can't stop it, but it's going to make it less painful to the people who are living here. And there's been clear testimony from the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association that there are going to be hospitals that shut down if we don't get Medicaid expansion because of changes in the Affordable Care Act and other budgetary changes that were made as a consequence of it that have cut off other sources of federal funding for those hospitals. So they're going to be in a real pickle. And, you know, when you look at what communities that develop and those that don't develop, you see that education is really important. You got to have good schools. You got to have a good airport. And the third thing that you got to have nowadays is good health care. And a community like Petersburg or if the Southern Peninsula Hospital has to shut down, that's going to really affect the ability of those communities after the recession is over to recover.
Larry, your thoughts about Medicaid expansion? Do you think it's important?
Of course it is. You know, like Greg pointed out, it creates jobs because you're going to be providing more health care services. But in the overall question of what we're discussing here, to lessen the effect of the recession, to preserve jobs, to keep money in the Alaska economy, you want to bring new dollars into the state. In the case of Medicaid, it's, what, 100 and some million dollars a year, $140 million a year of additional new federal spending in Alaska. That helps the economy. If it's oil and gas spending, if it's increased tourism to the state, we want to do everything we can, everything we reasonably can, to bring more dollars into the Alaska economy to cushion, can't eliminate, can't prevent, but to cushion the recession from the loss of state dollars, loss of federal dollars, and low oil prices. So, yeah, Medicaid is a very important, and as Greg says, a no-brainer to bring more money into the economy, separate from the argument that just keeping people in good health is a good public policy.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll take your calls. We'll continue talking to our guests, Larry Persily and Greg Erickson, about Alaska's economy and what we're headed for as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Alaska Pacific University is a private liberal arts and sciences university that emphasizes student engagement with the social, cultural, and environmental issues in Alaska and the world. This message sponsored by APU.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing Alaska's economy today, and I want to get to some ideas for what we may do to help stimulate the economy. So let's take a caller right now. We're going to take a call from James in Barrow. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Thank you for accepting my call. First thing I'd like to talk about is the state income tax issue. I was voting age when that issue came to ballot, and I voted no. That's the worst mistake we ever made as a state, to abolish the income tax. And I encourage all the young folks out there, if it ever gets on the ballot, which I don't think it will, vote yes. We need the income tax back in state, and for the economy's sake. The other issue I'd like to talk about is the permanent fund. I was also in the voting age when we decided this wonderful account, what to name it. And we anguished a long time for the name permanent fund. That's it. Look in the dictionary what permanent is. And it's the legislature, just keep your hands off it. The other issue I'd like to talk about is I live on the North Slope, and there's a novel idea. Let's build a train track across the North Slope from Point Hope to Kaktovik with the terminal, the main terminal in Prudhoe Bay. What about that? Transportation costs will go down. It's the only viable thing that you could do. We have technology now to build a train track on BSMs across the frozen ground. And I you know, you may not be able to have the heavy, heavy trains, but it'll work. And I thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you, James. Let's take some of the pieces individual here that James is talking about. An income tax, that's been bandied about a little bit. Jay Hammond, when he was governor, said, don't eliminate it, just reduce it to $1 a year, and then we can bring it back if we have to. It was eliminated, but in a state with less, we haven't cracked the million resident mark by any stretch. How much money could an income tax really generate for the state?
Depends on the rate, but it's going to be a reasonable rate, a rate that is not going to make people apoplectic. It's going to be several hundred million dollars a year. It is not by itself going to solve the state's fiscal problem, but if you're looking at trying to close that $3 billion budget gap, you can't do it with an income tax alone or budget cuts alone or permanent fund earnings alone. It's going to take some from everything.
And there's also been the discussion of a sales tax, a statewide sales tax. And I know that some communities, when people that live in Anchorage think, well, 3-4%, that wouldn't be so bad. We don't have sales tax now. But there are a lot of communities in the state that already do. And so if we piled on to what are already existing sales tax in smaller communities, that seems like that would have its own negative impact on the economy. So what's the thinking there? Greg, you can jump in too if you'd like.
Well, I'll let Larry. He's done a lot of Greg can the tax issues.
Right, and then I'll let Greg correct where I got it wrong. We have more than 100 municipalities in Alaska that already have a sales tax, and they've had it for years, for decades, some of them. It's the province of municipalities in Alaska. It's one of their chief revenue raisers. We have many communities with sales tax already at 5, 5.5, 6, even 7%. So if you pile 2 or 3% of a state sales tax on that, you are probably going to drive some business out of those communities, because now if I'm paying an 8 or 9 or 10% combined state municipal tax, at that point I think you're going to lose more business online and more business out of state, which would damage the economy even more, which you don't want to do. Also, with sales tax, you then, unless you told the cities they had to adopt the state's sales tax rules and regulations and limits and exemptions, merchants would have two sets of code books at the register, and they'd have to figure out what items taxable under the state rate, what is under the municipal rate. It'd be very complicated. I don't think you'd want both income and sales. I think income makes more sense to me, but I'll let Greg join in there.
Greg, your thoughts?
Yeah, the average state has that does have an income tax. Usually, taxes about 2% of per capita income. That would be on the average per capita. That would be about $600 and some per capita in Alaska. That's a pretty hefty tax, and I think Larry might consider that, and many Alaskans would consider that pretty onerous. But it would raise $450 million, and we don't have to go that high. The big competition here, really, in the end, I think, is not going to be so much between, well, I guess it's a three-way competition between a sales tax dipping into permanent fund income or an income tax. The one thing that I think would be really bad would be to dip into permanent fund income. That's really a regressive tax. It means you tax the low-income family a higher percentage than the high income family, just the opposite of what a income tax does. And I don't think that's fair or good for the economy. The sales tax issue is one that you correctly analyzed. There's already a lot of municipalities, that most municipalities other than Anchorage, that use the sales tax to provide a big chunk of their revenue. So you'd have to share that. And once sales taxes in total get above about 3 or 4%, it starts really to change the way people behave, as Larry mentioned.
Greg, when you mentioned dipping into permanent fund income, you're talking about taking from the permanent fund dividend rather than using some of the surplus earnings?
When you take from permanent fund earnings, whether you take out of the surplus earnings or whether you take out of the dividend fund, has the same ultimate effect, because the dividend can't be sustained unless you have a substantial cushion of surplus earnings. Now, I wouldn't necessarily oppose a one-time dip into the surplus earnings if it was necessary to prevent a lot of human suffering from the recession. But in terms of its relative impacts over the long run, anytime you take a dollar out of the earnings stream, it's going to some way result in lower dividends. So there's a difference there, but in the long run, they both have that effect.
1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide to join our conversation. The number in the Anchorage area is 550-8422, 550-8422, or you can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. I've had a number of email questions about, okay, so what do we do? Alaska has been dependent on oil since statehood. And about 90% of our income comes from oil. What can we do to wean ourselves from that? Or is there anything that the state can do to try to more greatly diversify its income? You mentioned, Greg, in your report, other industries, mineral mining, the smaller revenue generators for Alaska, seafood industry, mineral mining, federal spending. How much does this income matter to the state coffers, and what else can we be doing to help diversify and thereby stabilize the Alaska economy?
Well, in our report, Barker and I itemized four things that the state should be doing and that the policymakers should be thinking about. One is to first to focus on the economy. You know, you titled this program the state's something about the state's fiscal crisis, but really it's not a fiscal crisis, except as it is an economic crisis. And the economic crisis is by far the most serious of the problems, and I think that's the one that should be focused on. We should certainly try to husband our reserves, and we should make sure that the state gets on a more fiscally sound footing over the long run. But the immediate problem is going to be people losing their jobs, people losing their homes, businesses losing their value. Second thing is maximize the economic bang for the buck in state spending, which is such an important part of the economy. And we've already done that by cutting back the capital budget, and that's where the state spending has the least impact on the economy. And things like, and Medicaid expansion is the one thing that we could do, which we haven't done, which would maximize the economic bang for the buck in state spending. The third thing is to maximize federal dollars, and Medicaid spending, of course, would help do that as well. But there are other things that the state could do to maximize its state dollars, and the federal highway aid program and the airport aid program and other federal money. We've had a pretty good track record of being able to tap into those federal programs much more effectively than other states, in part because our bureaucracy has been in the Highway Transportation Department has been very effective at having projects ready when they became eligible and pushing for funding for them, and we should continue to do that. And hopefully our congressional delegation will support things that would help us do that, like resolution of the Federal Highway Trust Fund impasse. That's important. And the last thing we can do is plan for an Alaska with fewer people. Unless oil prices make a huge recovery, state population employment will shrink and eventually stabilize at a level below what we have today. Planning for this can hurry up our return to growth. And what that means is I think that we should focus on preserving existing assets rather than making new investments. Those are things that the state can help do to help set Alaska up for recovery. Now, the state, you talked about, you know, diversifying the economy. State politicians and policymakers and state residents generally, we've been trying for years and years and years to mobilize the oil money in a way that would give us a more balanced economy. Overwhelmingly, there's a few minor successes, but overwhelmingly, it has not been a successful policy. And I'm sure there will be renewed calls to build the Susitna Dam, and development will come from that, and to build a Kinnickarm Crossing, and that will cause development, or to subsidize the movie industry, that will cause economic development. Everybody who's studied these projects has found that they haven't paid off, and I don't think it's going to be any different in the future. So one thing I would suggest is avoid going down that road as attractive as it might appear.
Well, I want to talk a bit about oil prices, but first let's take a couple of calls here. Herman is in Aniak. Good morning, Herman.
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling from Aniak, Alaska, and I used to be city manager, and we kind of were in the same problem. We had to find a way to pay for the services we were providing, like maintaining the roads and sewer. So as bad as it sounds, we implemented a 2% sales tax. You know, and I agree with that person. We don't need a sales tax. You know, as bad as it may sound, maybe now is the time for a small income tax, because right now, because of the budget cuts, you know, here in rural Alaska, we're suffering. People are breathing this smoke, and they're closing the fire offs in the grass, you know, and it's because of the budget cuts, you know. And I disagree with that guy who said Medicaid, you know, if we expand Medicaid, it's going to bankrupt the state. Look at a country, it's going bankrupt. Look at Greece, they go bankrupt, you know. So I kind of disagree with that. But I'm running for our corporation, and I agree our corporations need to do more in the state of Alaska and the villages. I'm telling them we need to create businesses in the villages in Alaska. I agree with that. But to me, I think more opinion should be allowed to the Express and Talk of Alaska, you know, and it seems like it's not a talk of the radio host, you know, it should be a talk of Alaska. But anyhow, I need these teachers' unions, you know, they need to understand that the state is suffering and to keep asking for more and more and more money, you know, pretty soon there'll be no money to go around, you know, so they need to understand. And one more thing is oil tax credit to companies, you know, to the oil companies, oil tax credits, you know, they should cut that by about a fourth. They need to pay and understand what we're going through, too. But those are my ideas.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Herman, for calling in with your thoughts. Let's go to another caller now. Pam is in Homer. Good morning, Pam. Oh, Pam left us. All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the idea of higher oil prices. Currently, it's really the only way to save our bacon right now is through higher oil prices. Shell is proceeding with very expensive offshore exploration and development. What do you think this says about their thoughts? They're in this industry. Does this indicate that the industry expects the price to recover in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think before I answer that, we also need to remember Shell is looking offshore in federal waters. State production taxes don't matter to them. The state would not receive production tax revenue or royalty because it's not our water, not our leases. But so you need to look at, that'd be great to have oil in the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. It'd be great to have jobs. But in terms of public revenues to the state, it's going to be pretty low. In terms of the outlook, I think Shell, from what I understand, looks at a huge potential, multiple billions of barrels of oil offshore. When you are looking at a field that big, you don't need as high a price as maybe elsewhere. And long-term, I think Shell and the industry expects prices will increase from today's $60 as you're looking at the next 20, 30, 40 years. It probably won't stay that low because at that price, you cannot develop some of the new fields that are going to be needed. But I doubt Shell is betting on $140 oil either.
Do you think that if that rise in prices is for oil is coming in the future, can we make it to that next rise through reduced state spending and using savings? Or tell us, Greg, what you think the prediction looks like in that respect.
Well, I'm not going to try to prognosticate when the oil prices will return, but we know they always go up and down. And if there's anything certain, it's that if there's low oil prices now, they'll be higher later, and if they're high now, they'll be lower later. It seems pretty clear to me that there is nothing that is going to happen that is going to change this trajectory if oil prices don't rise, and that in the long run, no question that the recession will end. And when it ends, Alaska will be smaller, is likely. And at that point, we can start growing again. And perhaps we'll have a more balanced economy when that growth occurs, because the growth will likely be in other sectors other than energy. But let me also say pretty clearly that oil is probably going to remain even in a post-recession Alaska, oil and natural gas probably going to remain real important parts of the Alaska economy.
All right. Well, we're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we'll ask a little bit about the future of gas in Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
We're talking about Alaska's economy on today's Talk of Alaska program. Larry Pursley and Greg Erickson are our guests today. Larry, we've had a couple email questions about the gas line. You and I have talked about this many times over the years. What is the current situation? Are prices anywhere near where they need to be for a line in Alaska to pencil out?
Well, actually, I was at an event last week and someone asked that question, and I guess my answer is the same as it was last week. At today's current spot market price, not contract, but if you would just go out there and buy a spot cargo of LNG in the world market, nobody would develop any LNG projects. The price is really low. The market is currently oversupplied, and a lot more sellers out there than buyers at the moment trying to place this gas. So, like Greg said, we know low prices eventually go up, high prices eventually come down. It was about a year and a half ago, spot prices for LNG in the global market set a record. $20, the equivalent of about $20 per 1,000 cubic feet. Today, $7, $7.50, I think. Some, it's going to be within that range. Somewhere in the middle of that range, the Alaska LNG project can compete, but today's price really shouldn't, well, it doesn't matter, and people shouldn't panic just because LNG is low today. If things work well, this project doesn't start producing for 9 years, and the expectation is prices will recover somewhat.
One of the things that you mentioned in the report, Greg, in the other income factors in Alaska is, of course, federal spending, which is very large here in the state, and military spending. You talked in terms of retraction of military spending, but with the current sort of chilly relationship with Russia and the escalating international interest in Arctic resources, isn't it reasonable to sort of expect a ramp up rather than a pullback for the military in Alaska?
Well, that's certainly a factor that would tend to improve Alaska's position, and certainly Senator Murkowski in particular has, all Alaska's congressional delegation have emphasized that, and when they fight for keeping the various bases open or relocating F-16 squadrons or what have you. But over that, we have sequestration, the federal law, which says they have to scale back total size of the military. And while the current increase in tension may and problems in terms of the Middle East may cause some rollbacks on that and lessen the downward pressure from those national and international affairs, Alaska has to compete with all sorts of other demands for military spending. So I don't think we're out of the woods because of that. But it's a positive factor, no doubt about it.
All right, well, let's return to the phones for just a moment. Beverly is with us from Prince of Wales Island. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Beverly Tyner. I live in Craig on Prince of Wales Island, which is 60 floatplane miles west of Ketchikan in southern southeast Alaska. And I have lived on this island most of the time since 1988. So I've watched our economies boom and bust and regroup. And in 1988, we had a very viable timber industry, and life was good, and logs were getting cut as fast as they could and went abroad on lumber ships, logging ships to the far east. We also had mills. Mills started to go down. It closed in Wrangell and Sitka and Ketchikan. Logging started to go down. Jobs started to go down, and the people that came with those jobs, many of them had to leave. And our traditional people here, we have Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people who have been here thousands of years, and their traditions are around fishing for food, and maintaining, you know, balance in the food. And so that's a very important aspect of our fishing industry, which is also commercially a very important employer of local as well as some out-of-state fishermen. We now have a sports charter industry that brings a tourist economy to our rural little island, which is actually very big. I think it's Kodiak and Prince Wales are in the same category. And so people here have both federal and state needs. The federal needs are through IHS and other programs and grants, through the federal grant programs, through the tribes.
And did you have a question, Beverly, or...?
I'm just commenting. Okay. I'm responding to the gentleman of North Slope Way. All of us depend on Social Security and Medicare, and some of us who don't have other means of health insurance need Medicaid, and that is based on 15 years of experience working with our elderly, disabled populations in our island-wide communities of all traditions and descents.
So you're in favor of Medicaid expansion. Okay, thank you for the for those comments. We only have about a minute or so left. Larry, what are your thoughts about what the state government can do right now to help soften this blow? And then, Greg, I'll turn to you for a final comment in our last minute here.
Plan for reality. I think the reality is you're going to have to have some more budget cuts. You're going to have to look at using permanent fund earnings. You're going to have to look at it. An income tax, probably look at oil tax credits to see if those are being wisely spent and getting a return for the state, and just deal with the reality that we've lived for free for 40 years off oil, and it just isn't going to continue separate from the state shrinking.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry Pursley, for your time today. And Greg Erickson, some final thoughts?
Well, a lot depends on what's in people's hearts. When in the 1950s, when I was going to school in Anchorage, my parents paid 2.5 times as much as current Anchorage residents pay in property taxes in real terms. They made a real commitment to Alaska back in those days, and Alaskans. So a lot depends on what happens to Alaska. Depends on how people feel about that, about its future and their place in it. After World War II, the economy pretty much collapsed, and yet Alaska's population continued to expand because young people kept coming here to start a new life. So that's always something economists have a hard time getting a handle on, but it's real, real important. And no real insight from me on where that's going. That's about it.
Okay, thank you so much to my guests, Greg Erickson, Alaska economist, Larry Pursley, Kenai Borough Government Advisor on Oil and Gas. Also, thanks to you for listening. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.